There's a very big theme in the Bible that the apostate amongst God's people, be it natural Israel or spiritual Israel, are likened to the world around them and will receive the same judgment as the world around them. I want to give you two examples, one from the Old Testament in Nahum 3 and another related one from the New Testament in Revelation 18. In Nahum, you've got a description of the judgment to come upon Assyria and possibly Babylon. And yet it's described in the very same language as the judgments upon Jerusalem. Verse 1, "Woe to the city of blood, it's full of lies and robbery." Well, that is exactly the language of Jeremiah and Ezekiel. "Woe to you, the city of blood," Jeremiah 26, Ezekiel 7, Ezekiel 9, Ezekiel 22, Ezekiel 24. "You are the city of blood, you are full of lies and robbery." But this is the same language as used about Assyria and Babylon. In other words, you, Jerusalem, are no better than those cities. You are going to have the same judgment. Then verse 4 of Nahum 3, "She is an alluring prostitute, the mistress of witchcraft, who sells nations through her prostitution," etc. Well, Jerusalem is called a prostitute, so is Babylon, and here so is Nineveh. So again, you see that the same language is used about both Jerusalem, the apostate amongst God's people, and the very worst of the Gentile world. Verse 5 of Nahum 3, about Nineveh, "I will lift your skirts over your face, I will show the nations your nakedness." This is word for word, Jeremiah 13, 26. This is what God said he would do to his people, to Judah. He would lift up their skirts over their face and reveal their nakedness to the nations. Verse 9. Nineveh is condemned for trusting in Egypt as her strength and her helper. Well, exactly the same. God, especially in Isaiah, keeps on condemning Judah for trusting in Egypt for help. Verse 10, "The judgment on Nineveh will be that she shall go into captivity. Her young children shall be dashed in pieces at the head of the streets, and they shall cast lots for her honourable men, and her senior leaders will be bound in chains." Just read Isaiah 51. That is word for word what is said about Judah. They are going to be stripped by grasshoppers. Nineveh would be stripped by grasshoppers. Verse 16, just what Joel 1 says was going to happen to Judah. Keeps going on. Verse 18, "Your shepherds slumber, your nobles lie down, and so therefore your people are scattered on the mountains with none to gather them." That is Ezekiel 34 about what was going to happen to the exiles of God's people. Now, what's my point? My point is really what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 11, that those who are of God's people, who act like the world around them, will be, to quote Paul, condemned with the world. That means that if we act like this world, we shall receive this world's judgment. And Paul mentions that in the context of the breaking of bread and urges us to examine ourselves. So when it comes to where our innermost heart is, I mean, where is your heart? Where is your dream? Is your dream to go on holiday with the guys from work, with the girls from work, with the folks that you've met in your life, and to do all the things that they do, go drinking, have a good time, whatever, carry on just how they do? Is that your dream? Because if it is, okay, so the Lord comes and this world is then under condemnation, well, okay, you wanted to be with them, you were of them, well, go back into the world. I definitely don't believe that Jesus is going to torture people or that condemnation means, you know, literal hell fire. The fire of Gehenna is symbolic. The wages of sin is death, what Revelation calls the second death. There is no eternal torment. But there's a lot of description of torment, people weeping and gnashing their teeth. But it's not because Jesus, as it were, made them do that or put, you know, hot rods on them to make them do that. It's just that they will then realize how foolish they have been. The weeping and gnashing of teeth will be in frustration and anger with themselves. So, yeah, this is a call for separation from the world, but from our hearts, because our hearts are not in the things of this world. Because the day is coming when this world, with all its supposed culture, with all its supposed development, etc., and niceness and whatever, and supposed humanity, supposedly, all that is going to end. All that shall be destroyed. And it is only the things of God and his Son and his kingdom which shall last forever, because the stone is coming to destroy the kingdoms of men, and they shall be swept away and shall be found no more. There will be no vestige of any of this stuff in God's kingdom. And it depends where your heart is. If your heart is with all that stuff, then you shall be blown away with it. But if your heart is in the things of God's eternal kingdom, then that is where you shall eternally be. Well, I said I wanted to prove this from the New Testament. And in Revelation 18, you've got something similar. You've got a description of Babylon, Babylon the Great. And yet, as you go through the description of Babylon, it's quite clear that this is based upon the Old Testament descriptions of Jerusalem and Israel. Although it also does clearly allude to the Old Testament prophecies about Babylon. I think the original readership of Revelation 18 in the first century, in the lead up to AD 70, would have been Jews in Jerusalem, Jewish Christians who were tempted to go back into Judaism. This was a huge problem that the thousands whom Peter had baptized on the day of Pentecost were going back into Judaism. And you can see that the problem is dealt with in the letter to the Hebrews. You can see it being addressed in other parts of the New Testament. And so, in my opinion, the first initial understanding of this Babylon the Great was the system of apostate Judaism that was now developed in the temple. And of course, it was Jewish opposition to the gospel which was the great Satan to the early Christian church. It was the Jews repeatedly throughout the Acts of the Apostles who were articulating the persecution against the preaching of Paul and others. So then, here, as I say, you have a picture of a symbolic Babylon that, yes, is based on the historical Babylon, but the whole thing is full of allusion to Solomon's temple, to Solomon himself, and to the descriptions of Israel as a whore, as a prostitute, and etc. in the Old Testament. For example, in Revelation 13, you've got this mention of 666 as a significant number in all this. And any Old Testament reference you've got to that is 666 talents of gold every year going to Solomon. And when you look at the merchandise that's listed, for example, Revelation 18, verse 12, gold, silver, precious stones, fine linen, purple, silk, scarlet, and so forth, this is all very much the materials associated with Solomon's kingdom and with the temple. It's what he traded in, and many of these things are what the temple cult was built out of, and the materials of the tabernacle. The high priest, Caiaphas, was dressed with purple. Jesus says this, Luke 16, verse 19. And there's a lot of reference here to the religious clothing of Israel, as it's described in Ezekiel 16. And yet, this totally corrupt Jewish priesthood is being described here as Babylon. And the point is, come out from her, my people, lest you be consumed in her sins and partake of her plagues. Okay, that was how I suggest the fulfillment was in the first century, but however you want to interpret Babylon, in whatever sense, in later years, in our last days, or whatever, the point is, if you don't come out, you are going to share in her judgment. That is the point. That was always the point. And the point then is repeated. As again, we come back to 1 Corinthians 11. So that we should not be condemned with the world. Paul says in the context of the breaking of bread, examine yourself, condemn yourself, judge yourself. It's all the same family of words, this krino family of words, same basic word for judge, condemn, examine, etc. He's saying, look, examine yourself. condemn yourself, realize that you're a sinner, throw yourself completely upon the things of the Lord Jesus and his grace, and come out from the life of sin, the system of sin. And if you don't, you will be condemned with the world. This is going to be the worst judgment, surely, to be sent back into the world that you have in your lifetime so loved. I'm not saying that we should hate the world. God so loved this world that he gave his only begotten Son. We love this world in order to save it. But that is not the same as being of this world. You're probably aware of the distinction that the Lord Jesus makes in his prayer in John 17, that he doesn't pray that we should be taken out of the world, and that we who are in the world should be kept, because we are not of the world. So we are in this world, but not of it. And that is, I think, very significant. In the same way as the Lord Jesus was in this world, and absolutely 100% genuinely human of our nature, but he was clearly not of this world. He was holy, harmless, and undefiled. And this is, of course, the pattern for us. Not to think that spirituality is being totally, you know, coming out of the world and living in a monastery or whatever. It isn't that. It's not external separation. Jesus dined with prostitutes and tax collectors and so forth to, I think, demonstrate the point that he was in the world, but he was clearly not of this world. Because if we are of this world, if we do not in our hearts come out from amongst them and be separate, then we shall be condemned, make no mistake about it, in the judgment that is absolutely going to come on every aspect and dimension of the societies in which we live.